Shabbat Shalom. Every season of the Jewish year brings with it a certain sentiment. Renewal on Rosh Hashanah, repentance on Yom Kippur, playfulness on Purim. Today is the 11th day of the 49 days between Passover and Shavuot, the counting of the Omer, or the Sfira, the counting that signals ancient Israel's liberated march out of Egypt towards becoming a nation at Mount Sinai by way of receiving God's most sacred possession, the Torah. Given the calendrical moment, our mood, one would think, would reflect the combination of anticipation, of love, and of joy. The cry of "Let my people go" has been fulfilled, and now we anticipate the intimacy of being God's treasured people. It should be the most joyous time of the Jewish year. Which is why it's so very interesting and unexpected that the rabbis assign these weeks a somber, if not sorrowful, mood. In traditional communities, for instance, one does not plan a wedding during these weeks. While customs differ widely, there are also those who do not purchase new clothes, shave, or get haircuts during this time of year, actions that are understood to be signs of luxury and indulgence. The Talmud explains that it was during these weeks, just prior to the failed Bar Kokhba revolt against the Romans, that 24,000 of Rabbi Akiva's students perished, bequeathing the Jewish people a period of mourning for generations to follow. The same window of time, ostensibly reserved for the building up of national identity, now forever linked with vulnerability, loss, and sorrow, a sense of opportunity intermixed with a sense of anxiety, joy, and sorrow side by side at the same time. And from our ancient roots, right up to the 20th century, it's the same paradox, the same balancing act between power and powerlessness, opportunity and anxiety, that is a hallmark of this season. Monday night, we'll gather as a community to observe Yom HaShoah, a day devoted to remembering those 6 million men, women, and children who perished at the hands of the Nazis and their collaborators. We who live in the extended shadow of the darkest hour of Jewish, if not human, history know full well our obligation to remember, to bear witness, to live up to the commandment of never again, all the more so in these decades witnessing the passing of the survivor generation. We know the atrocities that humanity is incapable of inflicting. We know what it means to sit helpless as the world watches, and we stand nervously vigilant lest the ancient hatred of anti-Semitism once again rear its ugly head. And yet, we also know that by a fluke of history, just a week after Yom HaShoah, we will go on to celebrate Yom HaAtzma'ut, Israel's Independence Day, having also observed Israel's Memorial Day, Yom HaZikaron, just the day prior. If Yom HaShoah is all about the perils of powerlessness and victimization, then Yom HaAtzma'ut is all about Jewish self-determination, sovereignty, and the right of Jews, as my dear friend Dr. Ken Stein teaches, to be the subject of our own sentence rather than the object of someone else's. From exile to homecoming, victims to victors, to be a free people in our own land. That is a promise, that is a power, that is a miracle of the modern state of Israel that we celebrate on Yom HaAtzma'ut and on every day. Destruction and rebirth, sorrow and gladness, the retreat of God's presence and the bold reassertion of God into Jewish history. These days between Yom HaShoah and Yom HaAtzma'ut are, to say the very least, a roller coaster ride. It's a ride, to be sure, that we are on not just at this time of year, but at the heart of the very condition of our Jewish generation. More than any other generation, contemporary Jewry shuttles between anxiety and self-confidence, unease and self-assurance. No different than the Israelites of old. We're an emancipated people, a community able to freely express our faith, living through a time when Jewish engagement is a loving and voluntary choice that anyone can make. The unprecedented blessings of American Jewry are compounded by way of our knowledge that we live in the presence of the modern miracle that is the State of Israel. First and foremost, a Jewish homeland, but also a formidable actor on the world stage, an innovator in too many fields to count, and a daily fulfillment of the prophetic challenge to be a light amongst nations. We live in a time with more blessings and opportunities than can be counted. And yet, there is also anxiety. There are, we know, bad actors on the world stage, in Israel, in the States, in Europe, and elsewhere. Iran's nuclear ambitions are an ongoing existential threat to the Jewish homeland. With two delicate exceptions, Israel's neighbors do not recognize her right to exist. Beyond physical threats, Israel faces charges and challenges on the stage of world opinion that no other nation would countenance. Here in the States, swastikas are painted on the walls of JCCs and synagogues, and hate speech adorns web page after web page. On campus after campus, our children face a challenge of BDS, and here in the city, in our paper of record, a convicted terrorist can publish an op-ed having been described as a leader and a parliamentarian. From the alt-right to the liberal left, on the continent, campus, and beyond, with the scar of the Shoah ever present and ever felt, is it all so hard to understand why contemporary Jewry is anxious about its present and future? Given all of our exposed nerves, can we really be blamed for being a tad twitchy, a bit touchy when it comes to the safety and security of our people? You know, earlier this week, I was asked a question by a congregant and friend that I've never been asked before. Having heard me speak of the challenges of American Jewry, the plight of Syrian refugees, the relationship of American Jewry to Israel, and my recommendations regarding outreach, conversion, mikvah, and otherwise, my congregant asked, "Rabbi Cosgrove, is there a thread? Is there a thread that brings it all together? Am I tadpole-like jumping from lily pad to lily pad, responding to the issues of the day? Or is there a framework by which to understand my recommendations for the community?" Well, lacking a therapist's couch, but blessed with a pulpit, my answer to my congregant and to this congregation would be the suggestion that the issues on the docket of contemporary Jewry to which I or any rabbi responds can, more often than not, be understood through the prism of the anxieties and the opportunities as expressed in this time of year, but really present year round. Yes, each issue has its particulars, but they are all individually and collectively symptomatic of the fact that we are a Jewish generation living in the dialectic of power and powerlessness, victor and victim, joy and sorrow. We are necessarily absorbed by those issues that bring to the fore the paradoxes, contradictions, and disorienting perplexities of what it is to be a modern Jew today. Think about it. Why are our conversations about Israel so tense? Why is there so much vitriol and toxicity in the debate? Well, I imagine part of the reason is our struggle to reconcile the fact of Israel being a powerful, sovereign, and imperfect state that also must stand in the face of a constant barrage of physical threats and public attacks. Like breaking a glass at a wedding, we are filled both with joy and an awareness of just how fragile life is. How much does Israel need us? How much do we need them? Do they speak for us? Do we speak for them? These are complicated questions, and they're being played out daily whether we acknowledge them or not. What about our present debates about intermarriage, conversion, and outreach? Why a renewed interest on the subject? It's, after all, not a new one. I think the reason, or at least part of the reason, is the unexpressed but ever-present truth that we know that we live in a time and place when we can opt to engage in Jewish life any way we see fit. But we, our children, and our children's children don't necessarily opt to do so. We are a Jewish generation sandwiched between those who lost their lives on account of being Jewish and a generation who are increasingly self-selecting to live their lives outside the bounds of the Jewish community. Our debates over the boundaries of who is and isn't a Jew are symptomatic of much deeper, unspoken anxieties about the Jewish past and the Jewish future. What about refugees? Why do we debate the topic so much? On the one hand, as Jews, we were once strangers in a strange land, most recently a people whom the world turned their back on. Perhaps more than any other people, Jews have an obligation to those seeking refuge, and now that we're in a position to do something about it, we must. And yet, perhaps more than any other community, Jews stand on guard against those who would seek us harm in the States, in Israel, and elsewhere. We are caught betwixt and between our impulse to be responsive to a shared and suffering humanity and our parochial well-being. We can go down the list. Relations between American Jewry and Israel, anti-Semitism, religious pluralism, BDS on campus, each of these conversations, all very different in their particulars, all in some way symptomatic of the tensions of our age. Each one of these struggles somehow signal that we are a people who, on the one hand, have never had it so good, and yet, on the other hand, are deeply anxious about our Jewish future. There are freedoms we enjoy that no generation could have ever dreamed of, and there are freedoms of our age that may prove to be our undoing. It's a tension that is not and perhaps cannot be resolved, but it is the age in which we live, and we do ourselves a disservice not to acknowledge its nature and the complexities it brings. Vulnerability and self-assurance, anxiety and opportunity, identity formation and erosion, these are the tensions, the terms, the dialectic of our time. So where do we go? As with all things, the first step is to simply name and frame the conversation. Next, knowing what we know, we must be careful to avoid the extremes. We shouldn't shry gvalt at every turn, the Cossacks aren't coming, it's not 1938, and we don't live in Anatevka anymore. Not all criticism of Israel is anti-Semitism, and not every threat is an existential one. Besides, the blessings of American Jewry and Israel are just too good to be glossed over and ignored. It's a good time, a very good time to be a Jew, and so we mustn't squander the opportunity with infighting. We must leverage our blessings towards building up the Jewish future, defending Jewish interests, advocating on behalf of the Jewish state, and working tirelessly by way of our Judaism towards the betterment of our common humanity. As many of you may know, this semester my teenage daughter is living in Israel. We spoke the other day upon her return from a 5-day trip to Poland to see the concentration camps and to learn about the Jewish communities that once were and never again will be. Back in Israel, having seen what she saw and being struck by the knowledge that millions of beautiful, ordinary lives had been lost, before she hung up the phone with us, she paused to express how very grateful she was for the blessings of her life. It was a precious moment, the combination of bearing witness to the horrors of the Shoah and the miracle of Israel, prompting her to recognize that every moment and every blessing must be made to count. To know that life is delicate, to stand squarely in the face of the darkest moments of Jewish history and ancient hatreds that still persist, is, to say the very least, a sobering thought. And yet it's a thought that should not immobilize us. Quite the contrary. As my daughter taught me, it can serve to empower us. We can, if we so choose, be prompted to live our Jewish lives to the fullest, treating every moment as precious, every human being with respect, and to be truly grateful for every blessing we have. For Jews, anxiety and opportunity aren't opposites. They are interdependent partners, basic elements that impel us forward. Aware of our past, eyes open to the present, and always looking to the future, as we enter this coming week of Yom HaShoah and Yom HaAtzma'ut, may we rise to the calling of the hour, forging a future worthy of the unrealized dreams of the 6 million who will forever be in our hearts, worthy of the highest hopes of the generations still yet to come. Shabbat Shalom.